It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
All righty. It is the Jill on Money show, and we are so happy you're joining us today. This is like the best part of the week for us. We love putting together this program. We like talking to you, listening to your questions, interviewing cool people. If you do have a financial issue that has arisen, I know it's July, I know it's the summer, but things happen. You can't just write it off. You can't just say, okay, for the next 10, 12 weeks, I'm just not going to do anything. In fact, it's a great time to do some stuff. Maybe the kids are at camp, taking off for the summer. Give us a holler. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. Mark, when are you done with your second unit of the CFP exam? July 20th. So you got two down, and then when do you start the next one? Oh, so you're going to take August off. Very good. All right. Mark's studying. He's going to be a certified financial planner before you know it. Although you might do it all except the work part, right? You're going to try for an exemption? He doesn't know, but he's just doing this because he's knucklehead. And I am the senior CFP board ambassador. So anyway, we're cheerleaders for the CFP. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. 855-411-JILL. That's our phone number. Diana from Washington State is on the line. Hi, Diana. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Hi, Jill. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I have a insurance policy. Now, first, let me tell you, I have no heirs, but I have an insurance policy that I had in place when my mom was alive in case something happened to me that she'd be able to pay off our house, mm-hmm. basically. And it's a policy that I pay $40 a month for, and I believe it's in good until I'm 85 if I can continue paying on it. My question is, if I've gotten some, I've seen some things on line and on the radio that say you can sell policies. And my question is, if I go through and try to sell this policy, how you go about pricing them so that, you know, it's a $300,000 policy.
Is it a whole, what kind of insurance policy is it? Is it a whole life policy?
No, I think it's a, no, it's either, it's, I think it's a term. It's a term life. And
I think.
They said it doesn't matter whether it's term or, you know. It's,
okay. I really have no idea how you might price that. And I have, like, zero experience with this. So I know that there are so this is called a viatical settlement. That is, but I really don't know how it's done. So what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to kind of check this out and get back to you. I'm going to have to see who knows something about viaticals. I have to go find some super smart person and determine whether it's worth it or whether you just say, forget it. I'll just get rid of this policy and save myself $40 a month. So have you done any research yet?
I have not. I haven't contacted the company, but I wanted to find out, you know, would they just pay the premiums that I've paid up until now?
No, I don't think so. I think they give you some, I think they give you like a lump sum up front and then they take it over. But I don't know how much, and I don't know how much it would be. And I imagine there's a price to do it, of course, but I'm really, I have to say there've been a lot of, there are a lot of bad stuff that happen around viatical contracts, settlements rather. So they are based on how, you know, your life expectancy and then when you actually die. So I don't know if you're going to, how old are you now?
I'm 58.
Yeah, it's a long time. I bet you don't get that much for it. I have no idea. I'm going to tell you what you should do. First of all, go to your Washington State insurance regulator and go onto that website and check check out if there's any information there. You also may want to go to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. And the Federal Trade Commission would be the one who oversees the sale of life insurance policies. So I would check those out. I'll do a little research on my end. We'll communicate and find out what we both find and let's see where we stand. I mean, it just may not be all that much money. So thank you so much for calling. I haven't heard the term viatical in a long time. It's kind of funny. I mean, not that funny, but interesting. How about that? Funny, interesting. All right, let me do another question here. I got a bunch that I always have in my back pocket. Okay. This is one of my favorite questions that I've got, which is really more of a comment. Why is age 65 to 67 the target retirement age? I've worked for 12 years already, and now I have to work another 33. Oh my God, kill me. Okay, why would you invest in an index fund when valuations are so high right now? That's another question I got. Valuations aren't that high right now, but more to the point, market timing does not work. Every time people will say to me like, well, I don't want to invest because the market's too high. Then what happens? Things go down. Then what happens? You're too afraid to invest. What do you do? You know, you cannot play this game. You're asking for trouble when you are trying to outguess when the market is going to move higher or lower. Okay? So, there it is. Okay. Let's see. If I'm in a higher tax bracket now than I will be during retirement, does it make sense to use my company's 401k Roth option? Well, it depends how old you are. I like this Roth 401k because, first of all, you might be able to use a Roth 401k if you wouldn't normally get to use a Roth IRA from the income perspective. That's one really good reason to do it. And it's nice to have some money that's already been taxed. I think that I'm a fan of the Roth 401k. Not for everything, but I think it's not a bad thing to have some money. You know what your tax liability is. Remember when Ed Slott was on the show? He loves the Roth because he says it's like the one variable that you can really understand that this is money that has already been taxed, so you don't have to worry about how that might affect you. Maybe you want to work in retirement. It's not subject to the minimum required distribution. Roth is a kind of neat thing. Really is. All right, you're listening. Pardon me? Renamed after Senator Roth of Delaware. Mark just tried to get me on that. I knew it. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks. She covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Let me out.
Don't tell me. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger. And hey, by the way, we got all sorts of new stuff that's floating around, and it has nothing to do with me. Oh, I had to text Mark the other day and say, what's my Instagram password, which he did not know. So that was not helpful at all. However, Mark, we'll have to figure that out. I have an Instagram account now, evidently. I wanted to put something on there. I didn't know how to do it, but I just wanted to put something on there. Anyway, it's under... You see, there's two accounts. That's the problem. One is under my name, and the other is Jill on Money. And I have zero posts there. Someone must have set that up. Joe must have set that up for me. Oh, now I'm going to get in trouble because someone left a review of the show that said I talk too much to you. Darn it. Okay. Now I forgot who's on the phone. Is this Steve from North Carolina? Steve, welcome to Jill on Money. What can I do for you, sir?
I am sort of trying to figure out what the pros and cons of an annuity are.
Okay.
Near as I can figure, the pros are a steady funding stream, and the con is the person who sold you the annuity.
That is, I never thought of it that way, but it is well put. I mean, the problem with an annuity is not that it is a flawed product. You have hit the nail on the head. The problem with annuities is that they tend to be oversold. So you're absolutely right. The premise of an annuity is that an insurance company has created a product where it takes money from you and is able to then generate a stream of income, a constant stream of income. Now, there are many ways that that can happen. You can give the money to the insurance company and say, turn the stream on right now. That's an immediate annuity. Then there is something called a deferred annuity. Here's a bunch of money, and I'm going to send it off to you. And then in the future, I'll want to turn that stream of income on. Now, that is a premise that's quite appealing to people, right? Because we know pension plans have disappeared from private companies in big, huge numbers, and that the idea of having a stream of income is indeed something that I think makes you feel good, right? I don't have to live just off this big chunk of money. The problem occurs with an annuity in that there's lots of bells and whistles associated with it. And each of those bells and whistles costs money. And so the pricing of an annuity contract is so steep that the idea of a constant flow of income comes at such a high price that people are basically paying up for something they probably could create themselves. Now, there's also a brand new category, not brand new, but newish, I should say, of annuities that are low-cost annuities. And, you know, some of the big companies are getting into that. And so probably worth exploring. But again, so much of what we know from the industry is that the cost of these contracts is so steep that they can really be a loser for the investor.
So what would be the difference of having a funding stream from an annuity versus, say, having a bunch of mutual funds or stocks or something and having a broker that would supply you money every month based on your principal just by selling things and delivering it to you?
A couple of different things. Number one is that if you're talking about a taxable account, meaning just a plain old individual or joint account, the annuity structure is protected from taxation while it's in the accumulation phase. So that's one advantage when you look at one versus the other. When you pull money out of the annuity, a portion of the money that comes out is your cost basis, what you put in, not taxable. The other part, the accumulation, is taxed at your ordinary tax bracket. So I just want you to keep that in the back of your head. Stick a pin in that concept that you got ordinary income out of the annuity. Now, in your case, you say, hey, what's the difference? I have a broker or even you yourself. You're managing your money. And, you know, what you do is you're smart about it. You don't just sell things willy-nilly. You say, okay, for the next year, I'm going to need 50 grand out of this account. I'm going to set aside 50 grand in cash. And that's going to come out, you know, every month. I'll take 1/12 of 50 grand every single month. It'll come out. And I will make sure that the portfolio is created so that the cash portion gets replenished throughout the year. Maybe I'll have dividends flow into there. Maybe I'll have some interest flow into there. And at the end of the year, if I'm coming up short, I don't have enough money for the following year, I'll sell securities to make up the difference. That is a perfectly reasonable way to approach creating income out of an account. The downside is that you can really do a number on yourself if you try to time the market. So you have to be very disciplined to be able to carry that off. The advantage is, A, you are saving that cost, and B, the stuff you sell is subject to usually long-term capital gains, not ordinary income. So in many respects, the ability to manage your own taxable account, that actually is more tax efficient than the annuity structure. So again, I give the avoid the annuity structure an advantage for tax efficiency, but again, a lot of people get freaked out. They don't want to necessarily trust a broker to do it, or an advisor, or themselves. They just want to know, no matter what, this is the stream of income I get.
Well, that gives me a couple of things to think about. And the last thing that I think about is, why don't I just sell everything, put it in a passbook savings account so I can get it when I want it, even if it's only paying a tenth of a percent now? Maybe it'll go up tomorrow, just like maybe tomorrow the market will go down.
Okay, here's a good question for you. Tell me how much money's in that account, and let's see if you can really do that, because there is a group of people. There are a group of people who can do that. How much money's in that account?
Oh, if I wanted to do it with give me half a second here.
Okay.
Or say $500,000.
Okay. And is this all the money you have in the world?
No.
Okay. And how old are you?
70.
Married? Single?
Married.
Okay. How much money do you need on an annual basis out of that $500,000?
Oh, right now, none.
Okay. So I'm going to give you, this is so interesting. I have always thought in my mind that there's a cost to that, because if you threw it in a passbook savings account, or even, let's just go one step further, if you put it into a CD ladder, you bought a bunch of CDs, you just said, I want it to be safe no matter what, and you said, I am willing to forego the upside to protect my downside. What you do lose is you lose against inflation, because right now you're not going to get interest that will keep pace with inflation, and it's not exactly tax efficient. But if you have so much money that you actually don't need it and you hate risk, there's a case to be made that no matter what, you're actually in better shape. So I always thought that it was like a luxury of the rich to invest in an inefficient way. So if you're listening out there and you say, I don't need my money at all, I hate risk, I don't want to lose, I don't want to buy a product, I just want to be safe, build yourself a little CD ladder, know that you're losing against inflation and maybe taxes, and if that gives you more comfort than taking on any other potential strategy, which would keep your money ahead of inflation or leave more to your heirs, then you know what? I'm not going to say that's a bad idea. That is, you have earned the right to make a decision that's not the most financially prudent, but emotionally, it is the safest. So, Steve from North Carolina, thank you so much for giving us a holler. Great to talk to you. And if you are listening and you've got an annuity question, we'd love to talk to you as well. 855-411-JILL. That is our phone number. Our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Don't forget, listen to our podcast. It's called Better Off. You can get it anywhere you find your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, whatever. But check it out. And check out our YouTube channel. Just search Jill Schlesinger. You can see some good stuff and old shows, all that fun stuff. All right, Jill on Money, when we return, more of your questions. We'll be right back.
Young, old, it doesn't matter. She's here to help you. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we want to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. askjill@jillonmoney.com. Hey, I'm very excited about this. There's some big news coming out of the CFP board. And you know, I'm the senior CFP board ambassador, and it really does talk about the what's being contemplated is to make sure that anyone who is a CFP knows that when they act, when they're basically doing anything in the financial world, they are held to the fiduciary standard. So it doesn't matter whether you work for a company that doesn't adhere to that. You, if you hold that mark, the CFP mark, then your certificate, you would be held to that. So we're going to talk more about that in the future, because got some folks from the CFP board who are going to come on, because I want to do both, Mark. I want to put both for here and also for the podcast. Slightly different. Okay. Because we have a lot of folks who listen to this program who are in the business of giving financial advice. So I want to shout out to all of my CFP buddies. Okay. Here is an email from Gordon, who was commenting on an article that I wrote, my syndicated column for Tribune. And he says, a friend of mine got married a few years ago. It was the second marriage for both of them in their mid-60s. They decided to get a prenup. Each contacted his or her own lawyer. Both lawyers were new to the couple. Each lawyer drafted a prenup to the client's satisfaction. But when each lawyer reviewed the other one's draft, both lawyers said the same thing. The other lawyer didn't know the law and they could not reach a compromise. Both parties urged their own lawyer several times to work with the other lawyer so that an agreement could be worked out. But after several redrafts, the lawyers just couldn't agree. The process lasted 6 months, delayed the marriage date. Legal costs, $3,000 per lawyer. Couple gave up, wrote their own prenup. What advice would you give to a couple having this problem? Get new lawyers. That is an insane story. And I'll tell you what, shame on those lawyers. Shame on those lawyers. Because to me, that is really an absolute abrogation of your duty. Your client is saying, make a deal. And you're going out and trying to prove how smart you are, whatever you're doing. It's nonsense. And I think that it is important if you have a relationship like that. As soon as they said that if they did one round and they couldn't get a deal, I'd fire both of them. And I probably wouldn't pay the bill either. That's not nice. Maybe I'd pay the bill. Should I pay the bill or not, Mark? Mark says we have to pay the bill. All right, we'll pay the bill. But honestly, it's terrible. Just terrible. Okay, let's do another one. Here we go. This is an email, follow-up email. Hold on, let me find the original for a second here. This is, I'm old enough to withdraw from my 401k without penalty. And this person wants to do renovations to a 40-year-old home. And I asked for more follow-up. And so here is the follow-up, which is, let me begin by thanking you for helping people like me. I'm 61 years old. It took me 5 minutes to figure out how to play your audio clip on my old desktop computer. I don't want to add to my tax liability. I'm just looking for a small amount, maybe $20,000 to renovate my kitchen. My home's 40 years old. It's starting to need renovations, blah, blah, blah. Currently earn $53,000 a year. Going to claim Social Security benefits a little bit later, so at 66 and some change. There's a current loan against my 401k that must be satisfied in February of 2018. And I'm going to continue contributing to my 401k when the loan is satisfied. I'm debt-free. I have $3,000 balance on a major credit card, which paid for my father's needs when he passed away. My credit rating is high, and the question is really, what's a good rate? Should I wait till February to take another loan against my 401k? Okay, so now, because you only need $20,000, getting a loan against your home may not actually be the easiest way to do this. Potentially, what I might think about doing is waiting till you are paid off, right? So you're going to work for 5 or 6 more years. Let's say you're going to work for 5 years. You wait until the beginning of next year to take a loan. When you take that loan out, you should think about paying off the credit card, number one, easy peasy, and taking out enough money against that account to pay for the renovations. The other choice that you would, and that would, you know, you pay yourself interest, but there's a downside to that. The other choice is you get a home equity line of credit, not a home equity loan, a line of credit. And you establish that against your house, and you have your equity in your home against that. And you withdraw the money as needed. So the benefit of that is that, let's say the interest rate on something like that is usually the prime rate plus some amount, but it's going to be 3 or 4%. The one issue I have around getting the loan against your home in that respect is that you still have to pay it off, and you have to be disciplined about paying it off. So there are, if you can be disciplined about that, then maybe that's the best idea for you. And in terms of getting a new car, then I would probably look to try to get an auto loan with a very low interest rate, because I think that might really be helpful to you. I hesitate to tell you to take the money for the car, the money for the renovation, the money for the credit card, that $50,000 or so. I hesitate to tell you to take that from the house, even though it might be financially prudent to do so, because I'm nervous you're not going to pay it back. So if you can pinky swear with me that you will pay back that loan against your home, then you can feel free to do it. Or you can wait till next year and get a loan from your 401k and get a car loan. But that will force you to pay those loans back. That's the benefit of it. Okay, you're listening to Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Want to get in touch? Call or email any day, anytime. 855-411-JILL or askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I am Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst. You know how I got that title, Mark? Connie and I made it up. Sat in her office one day. Went through a whole bunch of titles, made that up. That's a friend of ours from CBS Radio who is recuperating right now. We're sending her our very best wishes. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL, send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Hey, you know that Mark has been big time busy, created a YouTube channel, an Instagram account. Are there any other thingy accounts that I need to know about that you've done? Any other social... You know, we're on Twitter at Jill on Money, Facebook, LinkedIn. I got to post some more on LinkedIn. I've fallen off there. Woof. It's too much stuff going on, man. I know I'm going to lose my influencer status. I think it's going to get watered down anyway. It already has. Used to mean something. Not sure it does anymore. I don't know. I'll have to see about that. Anyway, check out our podcast. It's called Better Off. You can get it at the Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcasts. Mark, what's your favorite podcast these days? What are you listening to? What's getting you going? Well, what news stuff? Come on, we got to give a little curation here. Yeah, really? So Mark listens to the BBC World News. I like... Okay, I think that there's a great snippet in the morning. The one that I like is the NPR Up First. I think that's pretty good. Is that the one? I may have just now screwed that up. Is that the, there's one that's NPR and there's one that, Up First. The Daily, that's the other one, is the one from the New York Times. Mark's not a fan. How about the CBS This Morning podcast? I've been on that a few times. You know what else I like? The podcast. If you guys are into like policy stuff, I'll tell you what's so cool. The Weeds. That's Vox. I think that's good. All right, give me one that's not a money one or just like a fun one. What do you give a fun one, Mark? Come on. Yeah. Here comes his fun one. Emperors of Rome. What is it? Oh, my God. Each week it's Roman history and they profile somebody. That's so cool. You know what I like? It's sort of, it's not really money, but it is kind of, I love Hidden Brain, which is an NPR podcast. And I love Radiolab, which is so freaking cool. I love it. Love it. All right. That's it. You want a really fun one? You want to feel hip? Go listen to Call Your Girlfriend. I feel so old when I listen to it. So good. All right. No, I am not even saying that on the air. Mark just gave me something, a dirty one. Anyway, check out that. Get into the podcast universe. It's fun. Okay. Jeannie writes, everyone says, keep your money in TSP, Thrift Savings Plan. Plan costs are so low, you don't have to worry about financial schemes. But, Jeannie says, I am considering moving my money. I've got $750,000, of which $150,000 is a Roth TSP. Thrift Savings Plan requires us to take money out at a proportional rate, so I cannot allow my Roth money to continue to grow once I need to start withdrawing the pre-tax money, which will be in about 5 years. I wonder what you think about rolling the whole amount into a Vanguard or similar account, at which point it will be separated into pre-tax and Roth accounts. I would then start a Roth conversion of about $20,000 each year for the next 5 years. Since I have very limited income right now and I'm living off a brokerage account, that's okay, I get it. So you get it, she's going to, you know, roll it over, start converting. Then she would allow that Roth money to be the last money she ever touches. Even better, pass it on to my daughter. I would be careful to convert only what I can do without throwing myself into a higher tax bracket. I just have a gut feeling that it might be the wrong move, even though on paper it looks like the way to go. It's so hard to take that step and roll over that much money, so I'd like your opinion. Thanks. You know what? Why not? Why is this a hard move? I mean, if you're going to go into, yes, the Thrift Savings Plan is cheap. So let me start by saying that. Yes, it is cheap. However, the Vanguard funds are also going to be cheap. So that's kind of the same. It's really the sort of a similar comparison. I like the idea of being able to convert the money. I like that you're doing it in a methodical way. It's just scary because it is a big amount of money. But I don't know. I think that sounds like a good deal. So might as well start. Do it. Make it happen. Dang it. Thanks for writing. I'm ready to go with that. $750,000. If you can convert your Roth, don't forget, you got to presume that she's got the money outside of her retirement account. Right? That's a big if. You must have that money outside of your retirement account. Otherwise, you are going to be in big, bad trouble. Okay? You're listening to Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. I'm going to consolidate a bunch of questions that I've recently gotten about minimum required distributions. So here's the problem. Once you turn 70 and a half, the government wants to get paid. Meaning that the money that goes into a 401k, a 403b, a traditional IRA, that money hasn't been taxed yet. So government put in this weirdo rule, which is, you know, in the year after you turn 70 and a half, you have to start pulling money out, blah, 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 blah. So it used to be a lot harder because it used to be that the onus fell on you, but now IRA sponsors are required to compute the amount. So one of the things that I think is really helpful is you can go check out tables, but you know there are calculators online. It is important for you to do this because if you don't, the penalty is 50% of the amount that you have not withdrawn. Okay? So that's very important. That's enough to make me say, I'm not missing anything. And what's really important here is that you get a plan together. Some people wanted to ask about whether or not you should be timing this or not. Should you do it beginning of the year, the end of the year? So I think what's helpful is to start by just doing it pegged to when you need any cash flow. But if not, then, you know, probably the end of the year is better, not the bitter end. Okay. And remember that every single person who has an IRA account, it's your IRA, it's your social security number. So you cannot take, if you're married, it's not as if one spouse can take a distribution from another spouse's IRA. Okay. All right. That was a quickie. Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send an email, ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.